day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've decided to join us today. New year, new schemes. That's the way it works in democracies, where elections and their consequences frequently have their first real impact once the calendar turns. This week in Lansing, Democrats are taking control of the state House and Senate for the first time in nearly 40 years. But even before they get to work with Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer on their agenda, we're going to start to see the fruits of the efforts that Whitmer was able to accomplish with Republicans in charge of the legislature during her last 2 years in office. Later in the hour, we are going to talk with University of Michigan President Santa Ono about his plans for the university and how he considers the university's connections to the state more broadly. But before we get there, we want to spend a little time unpacking the new laws that take effect here in Michigan this month and how they will affect our state. To do it, we're joined by Dave Boucher, who is a political reporter at the Detroit Free Press. He recently wrote an article that details 11 of the new laws going into effect this year. Dave, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's start with the things that you think will have the biggest impact on Michiganders and why. I think the popular narrative in Lansing was frequently that Governor Whitmer was unable to get lots of things done because the legislature was controlled by the opposite party. But the truth is that there were a number of things that she and the legislature were successful in bargaining to get done. So give me your list of the things that we should all have our attention turned to.
Sure, that's exactly right. I think it's worth, you know, noting that the legislature and the governor couldn't, for example, get a tax cut done, a sweeping tax cut, or maybe some systemic changes. But, you know, many of the new laws that are taking effect this year were sponsored by Republicans. And so it indicates that Republicans and Democrats were able to work across the aisle to get something done. Some of the issues that I think might affect most Michiganders, one of them is Michigan students have to take a new personal finance class in order to graduate high school in the future. So the curriculum for this class is still being created, and it's going to only apply to students who are in eighth grade starting in 2023 or later, but it's a new half credit class that students have to take. There's a little bit of flexibility involved, but this is a new class that all students are supposed to take. The idea being that kids won't be caught off guard by the financial decisions that await them in the future. So this is going to affect many Michiganders moving forward. Other bills that will affect students and people in general. Right now in Michigan law, anybody who has a service animal and legitimately needs that service animal can't be denied services or discriminated against by a local business or a restaurant. But people who train these animals can be. They can be turned away or otherwise not able to, you know, bring in these dogs or other animals for training before they become service animals. So under a new law that goes into effect in March, these same legal protections must also apply to the people who are training service animals. So that's going to have a big impact, again, on people who need these animals in order to function in society. One last bill that I'll highlight is Republicans and Democrats fought for years over election-related issues. We've all seen the fight that's kind of happened in Lansing and also in Washington over anything related to voting. But in the fall, Republicans and Democrats came together and made a few agreements ahead of the midterm election. One of those agreements that actually takes effect this year, took effect on New Year's Day, is expanding where communities can have polling places. I think we're all familiar with polling places at schools or at public libraries, but now the local communities can have polling places at banquet halls or community centers or clubhouses or other places that are privately owned, as long as the people who own these sites are not political candidates themselves, or as long as they don't run a political action committee, which is one of those things that, you know, funds campaigns and other political issues.
Yeah. So I want to talk just a little about that particular change, expanding the possibilities for places that people can vote. That may be a little surprising, I guess, that we have a new agreement among Democrats and Republicans to do that. I mean, given the concerns with things like election denial in past elections and even in last November's elections, are there concerns about how that may affect processing elections and whether it plays into this doubt that some people seem to have about the integrity of our elections process and in particular counting of votes?
So this is one of those bills that Republicans in the state house had actually already presented to the governor in the past, and she vetoed. And so this is part, the concerns with the bill were that, as I outlined earlier, that there might be undue influence based on who owns this particular polling place. Obviously, you know, there are laws already in place that prevent sort of electioneering or other similar activities at these libraries or schools. But there was a fear that if this was held at a local banquet hall, that, you know, if that person who owned it happened to be a Republican or Democrat running for the legislature, that might actually influence voters in an inappropriate way. But there was that specific language that I mentioned was added to the bill, and this was part of a broader legislative package. So there was a little bit of a give and take involved. For example, that there were other measures that were involved that included the ability for clerks to pre-process absentee ballots. So that's the idea of opening up envelopes, starting to get the process of counting ready without actually counting. So this was approved as part of that package, and after, again, years of debating and compromise.
So I want to talk a little about some consumer protections that we're going to have more of here in 2023 because of what the legislature did. This is an area of the law that for a really long time in Michigan was very active. When Frank Kelly was attorney general, this was a central part of his work. It still is in the attorney general's office. But we have some new things, I guess, that people who are buying things here in Michigan can count on.
Yeah, that's right. This is a bipartisan bill package that is aimed at combating scammers who are pretending to sell things on places like Facebook Marketplace or Amazon. I'm sure we've all seen deals on an online site that just feel fantastic or almost feel too good to be true. But in many cases, there are scammers who are pretending to sell something. Then somebody provides their personal financial information or some other personal information. Then those scammers either take the money involved in the purchase or otherwise use that personal information to steal an identity or do something untoward. So this law requires third-party sites need to collect specific information about sellers, and sellers are mandated to provide that information to sites. And so this information isn't going to be publicly available. Like, you're not going to have to provide like a bank account number to the buyer, but you do have to provide some basic banking and tax information to the actual platforms themselves. So again, if you want to sell something on Facebook Marketplace, there needs to be a system in place where you're providing this information to Facebook Marketplace to indicate that you are legitimate. In turn, those platforms need to make sure that there is some sort of security mechanism in place to ensure that that personal information isn't disclosed or otherwise, you know, taken advantage of.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking with Dave Boucher. He is a government and politics reporter with the Detroit Free Press. He recently wrote an article about 11 new laws going into effect this new year. We are on the fourth day of 2023. Some of these laws took effect January 1st. Some of the others take effect as the year unfolds. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call. Let us know what you think of new laws that affect us here in Michigan in 2023. Also, do you have any questions about things that were passed last year that take effect this year, how they work, how they might affect you? Also, what kind of things do you think the new legislature should be prioritizing in the newest session? We're about to have a discussion about the Democrats in Lansing who are taking full control of government in the governor's office and in the legislature for the first time in about 40 years. What is on their agenda? What will they be able to do? And what would you think they should start with? What are the things that you think are most important? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in our discussion that way. Dave, as I said in the open, this is the first time in a really long time that Democrats technically do not have to worry about Republican votes to get things done. They have majorities in both chambers of the legislature. And of course, Governor Whitmer was elected to another four-year term. There are a lot of expectations, I think, among Democratic voters and liberal and progressive advocacy groups about what should happen. Some of those expectations, I think, probably reach beyond what may be possible. Some of them may absolutely be within the realm of possibility. But I want to have you talk just a little about what we're likely to see in the first few months of this, which I think is really critical. The last time this happened, this all came apart really quickly. There was a debate about revenue and a tax hike that led to recall elections that ended the Democratic majority for almost four decades. So this idea of getting off to the right start, not angering voters, but also getting some things done that the voters who put them in charge expect. I think it's a little bit of a tricky path. So give me your sense of what they may start with and how you hold the majority together, but also how you make sure that you don't threaten that majority either through recalls, which are a little more difficult now than they were back in the 1980s, but also holding that majority into the 2024 elections.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of discussion in Lansing and in political circles about what issue is going to be House Bill 1 or Senate Bill 1. Mm-hmm. So the first legislative issue that is introduced, because that has historically had symbolic significance about what priorities are for the new session. While I think that is obviously important, I think it's not, it would be an issue to forget that there are some substantial logistical hurdles that need to be addressed before anybody can start actually addressing some of these policy issues that Democrats were elected to tackle. You know, as you noted, Democrats haven't held power in years, which means that none of the sitting lawmakers in the House or the Senate have ever led a committee meeting before. And so there needs to be some just logistical training mm-hmm. and practice, frankly, that's involved so that the people who are in these committees are familiar with how the process works. Obviously, many of these Democrats have been in committees before, but they've been in the minority. And in the past, that has meant that there has been, depending on the committee, little to no actual involvement in deciding which bills come up on an agenda, how those bills are discussed in committee, who gets to testify about those bills, which bills are assigned to which committees. This all sounds like it might be logistical, bureaucratic issues, but it's actually really important to figuring out how Democrats can legislate. I talked to a source yesterday who doesn't anticipate any quote-unquote big-ticket issues actually coming up until March, just because that process takes time. The governor isn't going to give her State of the State address until the end of this month. We aren't going to get her budget presentation until February. And again, lawmakers are still just kind of learning the ropes and potentially coming together to talk about how they can stay unified. You mentioned Democrats have the House and the Senate. They have a very narrow margin in the House. And so on any particular issue, be it gun reform, repealing abortion laws, repealing right to work, they need every single member of their caucus probably in order to get any of those issues addressed. So once Democrats come together and once they figure out the process, again, I think some of the biggest issues that we're going to see are changes in gun laws. The governor kind of flagged
that. Talked about that in her speech.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so I anticipate some of these, and these won't be strange ideas to people who've been following legislative process. There's probably going to be some updates to storage, gun safety and storage laws. There's been a lot of discussion about that after the massacre at Oxford High School. So there's going to be some discussions about that. I think that we're going to see Democrats repeal the 1931 abortion law. That's a law that is largely unenforceable now that there was the Proposition 3, the Constitutional Amendment passed in the midterm. But it's something that was obviously a big ticket issue for Democrats up and down the ballot. And so it would serve a purpose for Democrats to repeal that. And I think that there's some other what people could consider easy wins that aren't as aren't issues that might necessarily fire up Republicans on the other side. So, again, for example, there are currently protections in place for Michigan individuals who are members of the LGBTQ community to prevent them from being fired or evicted due to their sexual orientation or gender identity. But those protections are only afforded by case law, not by an actual statute. And that's been legislation that's been introduced in the past. I've been told by lawmakers in the past that they actually had the votes to approve it, but it was never actually brought up for a full vote. So those are issues that could come up and that people could, in theory, immediately approve, as opposed to, a right to work, which we've already heard a lot of discussions about. And there's, you know, this idea among conservatives and among the business community that that would be something that would be a step too far right out of the gate and might imperil a Democratic majority. So those are some of the issues that we think that they'll address. But again, don't expect this to come out in early January or even early February. It's going to take some time for lawmakers to kind of get their bearings. Mm.
Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phone. So let's start with John in Detroit. John, what's on your mind?
Well, I have to give you credit for sitting at the table with your good friend from the Detroit News. I noticed they put you on other sides of the table on Flashpoint.
That's for safety, John.
I give you a lot of credit. I really do. Because, you know, I read him for many, many years, and I just don't see the intelligence. I don't see the reasoning, but that's another story. So, right to work has got to be, top of the agenda. We might not want to do it right away to not ruffle feathers, but it's got to be up there. But there's a lot of other things, and repealing the gay marriage ban that our lovely Republicans did 15 years ago here. That's got to go out the door with the abortion ban. Just got to get it off the books. And So,
John, it sounds like to me, you've got a list of things that I think are probably best described as sort of core ideological liberal or progressive issues, things that send a message about what liberal politics and liberal government ought to be like, which I think is really, really interesting. And I think that there are a lot of Democratic voters who have those same expectations. At the same time, of course, I think the question is whether you can hold the caucus together to get those things done, A, and B, whether there would be this kind of ideological backlash against those things. All three of those things, I think, are sensible ideas from my point of view, but I think there are a lot of voters who might think differently. I really appreciate you bringing those up, though. Dave Boucher, talk about the likelihood, for instance, of something like right to work rising to the top, even if it's among other issues, as a way of signaling that, hey, look, it's a new day. There's a new ideological paradigm along with the idea of the kind of practical governance things they might want to do.
Yeah, so the day that the new House Democratic majority leaders were chosen, the media got the chance to interview the new Speaker of the House and other Democratic leaders. And the new Speaker, Joe Tate, and the new floor leader were asked if right to work would be repealed or if that would be something that would be taken up immediately. And the floor leader said, yes, absolutely. And the Speaker said, that's something that we're going to consider. And so I think that is indicative of this push and back and forth, and this idea that Democrats still need to get all on the same page about the strategy that's involved. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's highly likely that right to work is something that is on the agenda, and it's something that Democrats want to repeal. I don't know if that's going to be the first thing out of the gates that they do, but I do think it's something that they will address. I also think it's important to note that Detroit News pointed this out, and others have pointed this out, that after right to work was passed in Michigan, there was a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that essentially said, essentially implements a right to work law for public sector unions. So it says that even if right to work is repealed in Michigan, there would still be the essence of right to work would still be in effect for public sector unions. So it wouldn't apply to private sector unions, but it would apply to public sector unions. So I think that's also something that is at least worth considering when looking at that specific policy. The other policies that the caller mentioned are absolutely things that Democrats will take a look at and could address sooner in the legislative session, I would think.
Yeah. John, Happy New Year. And again, thanks for calling and participating in the show today. Let's go next to Pat in Birmingham. Pat, what's on your mind?
Yes, good morning. Happy New Year, Stephen.
Happy New Year to you, too.
If the guest could has any insights on how the changes in term limits may affect the legislature even this year. You may remember that there were some pretty strict limits on how long someone could serve in the House or in the Senate. a proposition actually changed those things. So I'm just kind of curious if there's any predictions about how that may shape this legislature or legislatures.
Pat, it's a great question. Dave Boucher, I've only got a couple minutes left before I've got a break, but I think this is an important question and a very critical issue, how legislators will behave now that they are not subject to the same very strict term limits that we've had for about 30, 35 years or so here in Michigan.
Yeah, I think the biggest practical change is the idea that lawmakers can continue to serve in the chamber where they're already serving a little bit longer. That could mean that if Democrats hold control of the chamber for another 2 years, that Joe Tate, a Detroit Democrat, could be the speaker for more than one term. And I think we've seen for a long time now that Michigan has had speakers for one two-year term, and then they're transitioning to another two-year term. So the concept that supporters of this amendment, constitutional amendment that changed term limits, pushed is the idea that it could include more experienced leadership leading committees and leading the legislature. So if Democrats were able to achieve what they want to achieve and voters like that, that could mean that Joe Tate could remain as the Speaker of the House, and that Democratic committee leaders could remain in charge of these committees. That's supposed to help ease sort of that bureaucratic transition that I mentioned that happens at the start of every legislative session. So that is a huge practical impact that we could see play out again, less so this session, but more so in the following session if Democrats keep control of the legislative chambers.
Okay. Dave Boucher, government and politics reporter with the Detroit Free Press. Really great to have you with us to talk about the new year and the legislature and the new laws. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to stay here in the state of Michigan, but turn to the University of Michigan and talk with the university's new president, Santa Ono. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.